We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip. When it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
Where the line between neighbor and nightmare is razor thin. Welcome to Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, featuring former prosecutor and defense attorney Eric Faddis.
The Delphi murder case has taken many twists and turns for years, but one of the biggest questions remains, why did investigators ignore the FBI's affidavit pointing to Ron Logan? His property was a crime scene. His alibi was false. And yet, the case suddenly shifted focus to Richard Allen years later. Was crucial evidence ignored? Did law enforcement push for a conviction over truth? Today, we're joined by defense attorney and former prosecutor Eric Faddis to break down the legal side of the baffling decisions made. Eric, based on what we know, was there enough probable cause to go and make an arrest on Ron Logan? It seemed like there was. The FBI seemed to say there was. And if so, why was he not pursued?
You know, there are significant pieces of evidence tying Ron Logan to this case. Now, probable cause is a pretty low standard. It's really just like, is there a reasonable probability that someone committed a crime? So it's not a high bar. You know, Ron Logan owned the property where the bodies were found. His alibi turns out to be false. A jail inmate says that he even confessed to these crimes. So when you put all of those things together, I think it surely meets that threshold for probable cause and for bringing a criminal charge.
Let me ask you this. As a defense attorney, let's say, you know, we're going back in time to 2017 here. Ron Logan calls you up and says, I need a defense attorney because this is not looking very good for me. There's two girls that died on my property, murdered on my property. I already called my buddy up and had him make an alibi for me, but I called him before anybody even knew the girls were murdered, before they even found the bodies. But I set that up. They kind of caught me in that lie. My friend ratted me out. You know, there's a lot of other pieces here that don't look so good. I have a history of violence and abuse. My ex-girlfriend's, you know, already calling them saying that he's seen me kind of be, or she's seen me kind of be creepy around other young girls before. And everything else that points towards Ron Logan, how would you as a defense attorney handle that? Would you be like, sorry, dude, this isn't going to work very good for you?
You know, if I was in the jurisdiction where Richard Allen was charged, I'd be a lot more comfortable taking the case because it seems like there was really kind of a tunnel vision going on once police sort of got wind of Richard Allen and wanted to go that direction. Generally speaking, that would be a super problematic case. You know, we would do everything we could to try and improve the defendant's legal position or not defendant at that point. But gosh, a bunch of red flags would be going off and I would probably have to have a come to Jesus talk at some point with that person.
I mean, we just will never know because he was never tried. He ended up dying a couple years later. And then eventually they shifted their focus over towards Richard Allen. But let's theoretically kind of break down some of these accusations that are out there against Ron Logan. And some of them aren't even accusations. It's just fact. It is what it is. And let's start with the alibi, the false alibi that he had his friend say that took him to the aquarium store, the fish store, during the precise times that the murders likely had taken place. And he does this prior to the bodies ever being found. Where do you go with that if you're an attorney and this is a glaring piece of evidence that doesn't look that good? Doesn't mean you killed them. I guess you could go down the road of, I'm really afraid they're going to, you know, get me on this, but it wasn't me, but it certainly doesn't look good. I mean, how do you go down the road of that one with, fictitious client Ron Logan?
Yeah, on the one hand, deception doesn't equal murder,
nope.
But it's a bad look, especially when ultimately there are two young girls found murdered on your property. And the police are going to take that into consideration. They're going to look at, what sort of measures were taken to conceal things, to throw police off the track of a person. And that's exactly what it looks like a false alibi in this case would do. And so that should just perk law enforcement's, ears even more to say, hey, look, why is this guy lying to us about where he was? And when you put all those other factors together, it just looks pretty grim for Logan. But it didn't turn out that way.
Then, of course, there's the bodies that were on his property. One of the big issues with the bodies is blood. Where did the blood go? The bodies looked very staged. They were actually like cleaned up. The FBI in their report said, look, whoever did this likely would have been heavily covered in blood. There's really not a lot of ways around this, but there's not the blood on the scene where the bodies were actually found. They found a little bit over here and a little bit over there, but it wasn't really enough to really answer the question of where did all the blood go on an injury that was inflicted upon the girls. Only thing that really makes a lot of sense there is they were moved, they were staged, they were cleaned up, which would require a place to do that. And Ron Logan's house is 1,400 feet from the actual crime scene. One could go, again, it's just kind of an assumption, but, you put pieces together and go, well, you got the property right here. One could assume maybe he took the bodies in, cleaned them up, went and staged them. I don't know. But the thing is, his house was investigated. We'll get to that in a moment, but we just don't know what the pieces of that investigation revealed. How do you argue that one?
Yeah, that's tough because not only would the person need a place to sort of clean things up, but they would need ready access to materials to clean things up. And there's no allegation that Richard Allen, brought bleach with him and a bunch of towels and whatever else you would need to clean up two very bloody bodies. But if you got a house nearby and you've got resources at the ready, that just increases the likelihood of guilt for Ron Logan there.
That's a very interesting point. I wasn't even thinking of it that way in terms of Richard Allen, because you're exactly right. He raised his hand, said he was out there. He didn't come with bleach. He didn't have any. There was nothing about him that showed that he would have just murdered some kids. And there really wasn't a place in time where he would have been able to go and clean them up and bring them back. And that required a lot of time when a window shows that he wasn't there for that long of a piece of time. Another very obviously troubling piece to that, but a piece that does not make sense with Richard Allen, but could sensibly make sense with Ron Logan. How about the cell phone data? That's another big piece of this. We hear about this all the time in so many cases, Koberger, you name it. Where did the cell phone put you at the time of the murders? Ron Logan's cell phone data places him near the crime scene around the time of the murders. Granted, he did live there, but the cell phone data even shows he wasn't in his house. He was down in the area where the bodies were actually found. Another kind of tough one that if he was pressed on, if he was brought to trial, I think that'd be a difficult one to argue.
As a former prosecutor looking at this, not only is the alibi false, he wasn't at the fish store or whatever, but we can actually place him where we believe the vicinity where these murders likely took place, or at least the abduction took place. And so, when you put all these pieces together, including digital forensic evidence, that is hard to refute. It's hard for a defense attorney to get in there and say, when the prosecution says his cell phone was where we think this murder happened, defense can't just say, no, it wasn't. There's not really an ability to refute that in an objective, scientific fashion.
Obviously, previous crimes don't necessarily mean proof of a future crime or another crime, but Ron has a history of violence and a documented history of violence. One of the things that his ex came out and said that when she said, you know, she was ready to leave and she was ready to get out, he takes a wrench and he bashes her over the head. She has to go and get 7 stitches, and that was the end of that relationship. And there's other accounts of Ron not being the most balanced individual when it comes to self-control. So there's a history of violence here. There's a history of charges there. He also went to the dump, like, right around the time of after these murders would have taken place, and he has no license, so he shouldn't have been doing that. We don't know what happened there either. It might have just been trash. We don't really know the answer. But again, never really looked into or investigated. How much would his past behavior possibly play influence on this when Richard Allen has no history, but Ron Logan certainly did?
It's an important and nuanced legal question because although prior crimes don't always come in during a jury trial, it's sort of fact dependent, they can absolutely be considered in terms of probable cause, in terms of charging an individual with a crime. The police can look at, hey, this guy has a violent past. He has these prior instances of violent conduct that makes it more likely that he may have committed this crime. Now, the prosecution might be a little hard pressed to tell the jury about it, but at least at the initial charging stage, it is a valid consideration and can lead to more revealing information as the investigation proceeds.
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
You're in the thick of a true crime saga, every detail sinking in. And then, wham, a commercial about something you couldn't care less about. It's like being served a microwaved dinner at a 5-star restaurant. But it doesn't have to be this way. Go for True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts. With True Crime Today Premium Plus, you get uninterrupted, ad-free episodes, extended interviews that dig even deeper into the muck, and early access so you can brag to your friends. It's like ordering the secret menu at a crime buffet. So, search for True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and savor every twisted detail without interruption.
What if I told you that right now, millions of people are living with a debilitating condition that's so misunderstood, many of them don't even know that they have it? That condition is obsessive compulsive disorder, or OCD. I'm Dr. Patrick McGrath, the Chief Clinical Officer of NOCD. And in the 25 years I've been treating OCD, I've met so many people who were suffering from the condition in silence, unaware of just what it was. OCD can create overwhelming anxiety and fear around what you value most, make you question your identity, beliefs, and morals, and drive you to perform mentally and physically draining compulsions or rituals. Over my career, I've seen just how devastating OCD can be when it's left untreated. But help is available. That's where NOCD comes in. NOCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for obsessive compulsive disorder. Our licensed therapists are trained in exposure and response prevention therapy, a specialized treatment proven to be incredibly effective for OCD. So visit NOCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call with our team. That's NOCD.com.